Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Good morning, listeners. Another hot and sunny day. Looking forward to today's show. That music you're hearing is provided by Tony Salvatore. Well, very excited about today's show. We've got a great guest, and I can't wait to introduce him to us. Our guest today is, you ready? Nathaniel Landy, author of The Life and Times of Homer Sincere, whose amazing adventures are documented by his true and trusted friend, Rigby Canfield. This may be the longest title next to How Can I Believe You When You Said I Loved You When You Know I've Been a Liar All My Life. But this book was a great read. I really love this. And let me tell you a little bit about the author. I'm starting because I'm just so fascinated by this man. He has done so many different things. He's traveled, he's written, he's an author. He made an award-winning film. He's received notable reviews for Dispatches from the Front, published by Oxford University Press. And also he's had great bestsellers, the 10 best of everything. He's a journalist, author, filmmaker, and the creative force between Time, Inc. during his tenure as creative director for the magazine group and director of Time World News Service. Okay, without any further ado, I want to see if I can click him on the line. Here we go. Coming up. I'm sorry I took so long with that. Nathaniel, here you come. I know you're there.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. How's your voice, Nathaniel Landy?
I'm a little hoarse this morning, but I hope you hope it's not too raspy.
No, it's very nice. I got to tell you, Nathaniel, you have a new fan in me because I love this book. This book, reading it, I felt like I was discovering Mark Twain all over again. It was just the characters were so full-bodied and wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. I always love to hear something like that. That's why we writers write and publishers publish.
Oh, well, you've been doing this for years. You started out as a correspondent?
I started out with a correspondent with Time Life in the late 1960s. The early 1960s, and I held many positions at Time Incorporated, including creative director of the magazine group, and then eventually founded Time Life Films, and lastly headed the news service, where we broadcast to 70 countries from the pages of Time Magazine every day.
I couldn't help, in reading this book and reading your biography as well, they've sort of almost blended together, the stories.
Well, it is fiction, but we draw upon experience and everybody that we've ever known and things that we've done and people who we met, and we keep mental notebooks. And I've been very, very lucky to have had so many rich experiences.
Oh, yes. And in reading those and in your characters, I love the characters, first off. The title is the longest title I think I've read.
Well, Mark Twain used titles like that, oddly enough. If you look at the original editions of Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer, it's more than the Adventures of Tom Sawyer. It goes on for, maybe a short paragraph, the reading line. So it started with the Victorians, and Twain used it, and I started.
Now, I assume you're a fan of Twain because he comes up a little bit in your book.
Yeah, well, yes, I am. I mean, I'm a fan of Twain, but the man who had the most influence in my life was my mentor, the late Bill Styron, who wrote The Confessions of Nat Turner and Sophie's Choice. And to me,
oh, yes, I love those books.
And to me, he was a writer's writer, and we both attended the same university. Bill was much before me, but we had the same creative writing professor, a man by the name of William Blackburn, who imparted much in the way of developing style and character. So I was very, very lucky to have known Bill, and he was very kind and generous to me during my writing career. And before he died, he so kindly gave me a blurb for the book.
I saw that, and I have it here in my notes. I was looking at that. I'll read to the audience what he wrote. He called it a lovely confection of unforgettable characters you won't forget, a gem of a story, a sweeping panorama of American life and a testament to friendship, ambition, and loyalty.
Isn't that lovely?
That is, it's so nice, and it's lovely of you to mention him because, though he is passed, he is not forgotten.
Well, he's, I wish I could write about him, and I mentioned this in my...
Well, it's not over, Nathaniel. may still write about him.
Well, he's quite wonderful, and I was always amused when I would catch a phrase in his book. I would call him, and I said, "My God, the way you put that phrase together in those words." He said, "Well, use it. Make it your own." I said, "Oh, I can't do that." And he said, "Well, I've been stealing, from, authors all my life, including William Faulkner, who is,
love Faulkner.
Well, that was Bill Styron's sort of idol and mentor, and he once gave me, very good advice, read authors that you love and try to copy them. Just try to emulate their style, try to channel into their,
Well,
their...
that's how I felt about your book, The Life and Times of Homer Sincere, in that I thought it was, to tell you the truth, Miss Ann, I read it, I'm sorry I stutter when I get excited, I read it in one day, I couldn't put it down. Because I kept going, no, I got to know what else happens. I couldn't put it down. It was just like, and since you mentioned Faulkner, I loved reading Faulkner. And your flavor, the flavor you added of the South in there, of Louisiana. I loved the character Waldo. Was that based on someone?
Loosely, yes. I was... even though I was born in Canada, I was brought up in Georgia, where my father was professor of medicine. And so I grew to accept and love and be conditioned by a Southern sentiment. And there is a wonderful man in my life growing up by the name of Andrew, who is a black man who is my mother's chauffeur and gardener and cook and aide-de-camp and social secretary, and he often took care of me. And he was a rich, rich character and a rich philosopher, always imparting, great wisdom, and a very loving man.
You know what else I like, Nathaniel, about your book? It's, you don't often read this. I mean, I read a lot. I read quite a few books, and you don't really get any male relationships in books.
Them in this one.
In this one, I wouldn't say bromance, but it's, as they say, but it is such a, it is the essence and the truth of male friendship that as a female that I don't get to see.
Well, I'm so pleased to hear you say that. As you know, it is the relationship between, two young boys who grew up together, one very privileged and one not so privileged, and the effect each of them had on each other's lives. One could not have become the person they became without the other, and through the story, they both would fall in love with the same girl, and that creates a lot of dramatic conflict, between the two of them. And keeps the story and the pages, moving, the pages turning, hopefully.
And I liked that. I also liked in the character of Daisy how you chose to make her a strong woman.
She's very strong and very independent. And You're singing to the choir.
I know.
Nancy, I've lived with these characters for 15 years, and I adore every one of them.
But I like that about the book is that I thought you could have gone a different way, and you didn't. You kept her strong the whole time, and I'm not going to give anything away, but it's just that I said, oh, interesting, that you went that way with the book and that all the characters are strong. But the male bonding, I really do think your book will be an American classic and will be read again and again and studied, and essays will be done on it, and students will be reading it and quoting it. It was just so delightful to read a good book.
Thank you, Nancy. That means a lot, and that makes it all
worthwhile. And this is
worthwhile.
On Overlook Press, right?
Yeah, Overlook was started by a man by the name of Peter Mayer. And Peter is a legend in the publishing industry. Peter was chairman and head of both Penguin and Viking Press for years. And, about 10 years ago, Peter decided to start his own imprint. Viking and Penguin is still are his distributor. And being such a learned man and knowing publishing, he picks maybe 15, 20 books every year that he loves, and he gets behind those books, and he's an old-time publisher, and his editor, Aaron Schechter, is a terrific editor who loves a good story, and it is all about storytelling. And while they are a small press, they're a very, very prestigious press, from my view, and a very good press.
Where can people get this book, The Life and Times of Homer Sincere? You can get this on Amazon.
On Amazon. It's featured in Barnes & Noble, Borders. It's in all your bookstores, and you can order it, of course, through Barnes & Noble or Amazon, and of course, or directly from the publisher, which is overlookpress.com.
www.overlookpress.com.
Right. And to make it even easier, the book does have a website. So if you just Google, type in Homer Sincere, the website will come up, or www.homersincere.com, and there you'll find a splash page about the author, about the book, reviews, where to buy the book, and even a pal of mine by the name of Jake Roper wrote a song about the book on his own.
Oh, I have that song. And tell me about Jake Roper.
Jake Roper is just a great character. He's very independent. He's been doing arrangements for some of the more notable country western stars in the country.
Let's say his name slowly so that our listeners can look him up too. It's Jake.
Jake, J-A-K-E, Roper, R-O-P-E-R.
Roper, and that would probably be jakeroper.com if they want to look him up, I suppose.
I don't know.
All right, Jake, they can Google him.
Well, Jake is a very quiet, unassuming man. He has this, quote, kick-ass cowboy band, and they get together. And while he is a great musician and arranger who has done some of the great standards in country music from a lot of western stars, country stars in Nashville, Jake got a hold of the book, and before I knew it, he sent me this song, and it was such a generous gift, and it, in a way, from his point of view, tells what the book is about. So even on the Homer Sincere website, you can upload or download, I never know the difference, the song, The Ballad of Homer Sincere.
All right, well, let's play it.
Well, I just read a book about a Western movie fan. The life and times of Homer ends up where it began. His childhood journal, his daily journal, I came to the conclusion that the last cowboy is gone. But he never ate no peas. He saw lots of sugar babes, pretty sugar babes. But his eyes fell on a Southern belle whose love he tried to win. She played doo-wop.
That was great. That's as long as your title.
I know. I think it's such great fun. He's such a great musician. The way he can ease in from country into doo-wop, you know, I just, you know, that because Daisy is a very accomplished pianist, and she and Homer, growing up, they used to play doo-wop all the time. And then, of course, the story begins and ends in New Orleans.
I like that, too. You know what, Nathaniel, I like, with everything that has gone on with New Orleans and it's sort of rising from the ashes,
yep.
Your book coming out at this time, I think, is a little bit of a homage to the spirit of that town.
I do indeed. It has a lot of New Orleans, and many readers have written me that with a compliment that I'm able to capture time and place, and take you by the hand right there.
Yeah, it was just that it started there, that these two people sort of rose up and complimented each other as friends, and what one thought of as, I mean, a simple game of marbles,
yes.
And the other simplified it to it's just a game.
Yes.
It's God, just a game.
God, Nancy, you are good. You not only enhanced the quality of our lives, but wow, you just knocked me out how very perceptive you are.
Well, I think this book, by the way, WWW Overlook Press is the publisher, but you can get it on Amazon or any of the major bookstores. I think this book would make an incredible movie. I was seeing everything as you were writing it. I could see the town. I could see the horse-drawn carriage that Waldo was driving. I could see Waldo. I mean, it's, where's Waldo? I see him.
By design, it was written very cinematically. If you notice, the chapters are short with, almost subtitles that you would see, in a movie. And the style is cinematic, and I'm so pleased to hear you say that. I think it'll make a great movie as well.
I think it would make a great movie, and I don't think, I could see where some people might compare it to some other movies that were well-known, but I think it stands on its own. I've heard people say, I've asked about the book and reading that they said Forrest Gump, but I think it's beyond Forrest Gump. There's no sadness in your book. Your book is so positive.
Positive
message of love and friendship and again, the love thing. It's just love. It's just a game. It's just love.
Yes.
You know, there's enough for everybody.
Yeah. Well, people have, said that, which, again, is very complimentary. If I had to compare it to another book, it would be closer to Cider House Rules, John Irving's classic.
Oh, yes, John Irving.
And Billy Elliot, which, again, is, triumph. And all these
Think that your book is a bump up from that. I think that I read both books. I didn't read Billy Elliot. I read Cider House Rules. And again, your book doesn't have that darkness. I found your book very positive.
Well, it's bright certainly, and it's in a way, Nancy. It's about heroes, and we don't have many of those today. And it's about that we all need in our lives those people who pass through, who make a difference, and a mentor. We never know necessarily who they are, and sometimes we elect them. But I think we all need a hero, somebody to look up to. And this poor kid, he was pretty much alone as a kid. And, of course, the legendary Billy Sunshine, the great American movie
Cowboy.
Oh, yes, Billy
Sunshine, the last of the cowboys.
Exactly. Comes to life after he was, beaten by his father and, left alone.
What is it that you say in your book? I don't know if you could find that passage, but I think it set the tone for the rest of the character's survival, which was how do they do it? Imagination? He learns to see.
Well,
do you have that passage there?
Well, there's a couple of passages,
That was one of those that affected me was when, and I said, what a wonderful survival tool.
Well, Waldo
gave that character.
Yeah, Waldo, teaches them to visualize, and of course takes them to an old black church in New Orleans where the preacher, Daddy Grace, says, visualize. You can be anything you want to be, dream it, see it, believe it. And so it all fits in, with the narrative, because, he draws upon Billy Sunshine. They have these,
We should explain to the listeners that Billy Sunshine was a cowboy hero, and the boys
From the movies.
From the movies, and this was the boys' escapism. They both loved Billy. They were just, he would be like a star baseball player today.
Very much so. And Billy comes to life, and for the first part of the book, they have these wonderful conversations. It's a device, which,
But it's more than that. He comes to life. He's kind of his guardian angel.
Well, and Billy's a part of them, and he's, I mean, in the last analysis, it's Homer's, you know, voice, but it's Billy talking to him, and
getting him through the hard times, and
exactly, exactly, and Billy is.
Well, your book has so many layers. That's the thing, though. Your book has so many layers. It is just, as I said, I could not put it down because once I started reading it, I wanted to know what else happened, what else happened. And it's interesting, boy, that you mentioned Faulkner, because I used to go through all those books. Your book, The Life and Times of Homer Sincere, what you have done now is you make me want to read all your other books. Now, you wrote another award book, Cricket, as well.
Cricket was my first novel. And
that was your first novel?
Exactly, and about 20 years ago. And
oh,
you
wow.
You can still find copies if you go to Amazon.
Oh, I'm sure.
There are booksellers who have it. But that book was very gratifying. And, again, it was most first books are a bit autobiographical. And this one drew upon, you know, early life. And it is triumph, you know, over handicap. And has a lot of heart. And
well, you know, I have to go back now and read Cricket because, to me, as an avid reader, it would be interesting to see the 20-year difference now that you mentioned that.
Well, certainly in the writing style. And I was very gratified that the New York Times reviewed it, you know, gave it a wonderful, full of compliments and full of very supportive, and it was a beautiful review. I couldn't have been more pleased. You know,
oh, and you also wrote the 10 Best of Everything?
Yes, for National Geographic. And after I stepped down as director of Time World News Service, where I was intimately associated with 200 correspondents around the world, I had a garage full of files of some of the best places and things and events all over the world. And National Geographic marched right in and said, do a book, you know, for us. And that book has become a bestseller for National Geographic. It's 500,000 copies in print. And it's literally, you know, historical journeys and literary journeys. And then the first part of the book breaks down to everything from the 10 best watches to the 10 best destination restaurants. And it's been very, very...
Somebody emailed me a question. A lot of people can't figure out how to use the chat room. They're listening, but they can't figure out how to... So they emailed me. I can't figure out how to use the chat room. Is his book available on Kindle?
It will be. The practice of publishers these days, Nancy, is they wait about a month or two for the hardcover to have its run in the bookstores. Then it would definitely be on Kindle, I would say, in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, that would be great. That's terrific. Now, I want to go back to the book. Like, as I said, I absorbed this book. I mean, I didn't just read it. I absorbed it. I was just so taken on a trip, and it did remind me of, as a teenager, when I first started to read the classics, and how I would just read everything by one author. I would start with Dickens, Faulkner, Michener, any of the classics. I almost found it a lot like Gone with the Wind, and just that you took me through so many decades of these characters' lives and so many changes that they went through.
Well,
and I don't want to give away the ending, but, I mean,
right.
The ending was so... I was like almost in tears at the end because I was like, oh, no. It was just like,
well,
no.
I was in tears when I wrote it.
Were you really?
Yes. It,
oh.
It moved me profoundly.
That's where I said, when I read your biography and I read that part that towards the end.
In Vietnam. And sure,
yes.
Sure.
And I know that you had spent time in Vietnam and you had an award-winning film, Montage.
Yes, indeed, yes. It was on, you know, Life Photographers around the world, and it won all the awards.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And I also thought sometimes I had a never-ending story kind of quality to it, And when Billy would come on, I don't know if you remember the book Neverending Story, where it was written in two different inks.
Yes, yes.
Of time happening. And so
yeah.
I got a little of the flavor of Neverending Story as well.
Wow.
With that. Because
great.
Every time Billy Sunshine came on, I said, ooh, it's a book within a book.
Yeah, that, oh, wonderful, wonderful.
And I got that feeling from it. And the characters are so strong.
Well, you know, you mentioned the classics. You know, I mean, we weave that in there because he's brought up, you know, in this place outside of New Orleans, which, you know, has another a layer to it with Father Ravage, who is an ex-con.
I loved him.
Who, you know, does all these art forgeries to support the school, and he reads them, you know, cliff notes, all on the great classics. And Homer's brought up on the classics, and it's Father Ravage's mission to both save, his small little school for Homer to become a soldier of the word, and to go up to the Louisiana legislature and to address them.
Oh yes, that's a big, don't give it away. It's a big part
okay.
of the book. The also, I like that you said soldier, because when what were the four disciplines of the Jesuits? I'm trying to remember. There were four disciplines of the Jesuits.
Yes. It was inspiration, creativity. You got me.
No, I remember. No. It was something with a D. I remember the letters, but it was just when he told him about that right away. When you brought the character in there, the father, you know what? Who came to mind? Brian Dennehy.
Oh, good for you. Well, I modeled him. I modeled him on Michael Caine's performance, you know, in Cider House. Michael, plays, you know, the great doctor who. Who brings this up?
Good night, you kings of England.
yes. But the father, you know, finds the good Lord in jail and starts to go straight, but he needs a way to, you know, to support this school. And he plays a profound influence on
her. Well, that's the interesting part, Nathaniel, about your book is in your book, and it's probably for the first time I've ever seen this, males in the role of nurturer.
Yes, and God knows he needs them. But you got to remember, Daisy's very nurturing in her own way. He does, and, you know, the letter his mother writes to him. What could be more loving? And, I mean, his mother had his relationship with his mother was very, very influential, and there's some beautiful, there's some very, very rich passages.
Would you like to, do you have a favorite you'd like to share?
Well, I have two or three. Would you like for me to read just the opening?
Sure.
Introduction, which sets the tone of the book. May I do that?
Yes, please.
It's called Coming Attractions. On a summer afternoon in New Orleans, a cool breeze stirred in the Delta before lifting and crossing the Mississippi into the French Quarter and up to the Garden District, where I sat sipping mint and lemon iced tea, rocking back and forth in an old ladder-backed pine chair on the front porch of my past. This is the place I grew up, my family's plantation house and its tall wooden columns and floor-to-ceiling windows covered with slatted shutters to keep out the summer's heat. The rocking and the thick, humid air lulled me into a dreamlike state, my mind wandering as it often did in those days, back to when I was a boy, playing cowboys and Indians or getting into mischief with my best friend, doing what boys do on long, hot, lazy afternoons. A distant rumbling noise shook me out of my reflections. I looked far down the road and saw a truck that left plumes of yellow dust in its wake until it came to a stop at my door. Two men jumped out from the truck and unloaded a crate. "For you, Mr. Canfield, sign here," one said to me. The shipping paper revealed that the crate had come all the way from California with the attached note from Daisy. "Dear Rigby, I wanted to give you something that was essential to Homer, because without each other, neither of you could have become the men you became. He mentioned once that you always admired his desk, and I would like you to hear it, to have it now. I'm always thinking about him and feel his presence in many ways, and I'm fine. And after all these years, the ranch has grown so much that you would not recognize it, but it's also that a lot has stayed the same. I send my love, Daisy." So as I opened the crate, brown cardboard wrappings fell from an old pine desk. I swept a layer of quiet dust off the top, and for an instant remembered that when I had first seen it, that day and the present day served to meet and melt together, becoming one. For a long moment, I rubbed my hand over the smooth surface with a mixture of memory and emotion. So that's more or less, you know, how it starts.
I know the desk was very interesting that
right,
you put
and
it
you,
up.
And, you know,
and especially
on.
For a writer. I mean, the connection to your desk or your place of writing.
Exactly.
You know, it, because I assume you as a writer have a special room or special place and a ritual. What is your ritual before you start to write?
I write about it in the book. I sharpen about 50 pencils. I put on a favorite sweater. I walk around. I wash my hands. I do everything I can to avoid the, you know, sitting down to that empty yellow legal pad. And finally, the muse comes and it starts. And once it starts, I lose myself, and I will often find myself there for 12, 14 hours at a stretch.
Really?
Yeah. And you have to, you know, sometimes you have to exert a simply, you know, I mean, you're writing, you keep a journal in inky solitude. Sometimes the words don't come, but they eventually do. And to write is, the business of writing is writing, and the business of good writing is rewriting. And I think you have to be very disciplined. You have to set a schedule. It's like going to the office every morning. You get up and you allow yourself. And every day I write a minimum of 3 hours. But when I'm working on a project or a book, I get lost. And
now, do you have to have absolute solitude? No distractions? No.
Yeah. I have to cut off everything and just go to my study and go to my desk, and 14 hours later, my wife will come in and say, "You know, Nathaniel,
come up for air."
But you know, for 2 or 3 months, I'm lost. I'm at just another place.
Yes, I can understand where you go. Now, what is your special desk?
I have it here in my, it's an old campaign desk I've had for years, and I have it here in my office. And just as Rigby, in the novel, Rigby tells the story, and it's from that desk he finds Homer's journal. And it was a secret journal, and he found, you know, the Homer he never knew, and he constructs the story, and he tells the story of his friend, you know, based on Homer's journals, based on, the, you know, that desk that Homer carried with him wherever he went, to New York, to California, wherever Homer was, the desk followed with him.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't want to give it away. As I said, it was like reading a movie, in that it's just so, I don't know if your next step is the screenplay, but it was such a good story. I don't see how anybody couldn't make this into a movie. It's ridiculous. Okay. If this will be a movie, I just know it. And also, I found the passage that I was talking about.
The four disciplines?
Yes, the four disciplines, which were, or the four nobilities.
Yes, thank you.
The Four
thank
Nobilities.
You. Yes.
You see, I do read every book. I know people don't believe that I, as an interviewer, I read every book word for word. And it's Spirit, Discovery, Truth, Reason.
Thank you very much. And what good nobilities those are indeed. Thank you for
yes.
refreshing my memory. Absolutely.
We use words for weapons. I guess the pen is mightier than the sword would be the theme here.
Yep.
And that is true, too. And that's the other thing. This is a book within a book within a book because I forgot the most important thing in the life and times of Homer Sincere is his journal.
Well, of course. And then let's not forget when he gets to Time Life and he becomes the secret correspondent and his wonderfully amazing ability to copy the styles of other writers. One minute he's writing like Hemingway, the next minute he's he's influenced in writing in the style of John Steinbeck and Thomas Wolfe. Dispatching these stories as if they had, written a narrative about America in their style, which, again, he's almost, Nancy, the first blogger.
Yes, I was thinking that when, as I was reading it, I said, boy, this is kind of like a blog.
Yep.
But he was doing it.
There he is, there he is in the 1950s and 60s blogging away, over the news.
Ahead of his time. And that in where, again, your life and this book are almost one is the, while I was reading it, because I, having researched you as well, and I was going, but this book is so you. This book is so much you, Nathaniel.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm Homer Sincere or as mischievous as Rigby Canfield. Perhaps there's a little bit of both.
I think you're a combination of all the characters in there. I love that Waldo would rhyme everything, except the one time when he couldn't rhyme orange because nothing
That's
rhymes
right.
with orange.
Yeah, nothing rhymes with orange. Exactly. Well, I think it was Tennyson insightfully said, you're part of all those whom you've met. And we are. We're greatly part of.
Yeah, everyone you meet, well, as a writer, you're constantly, I'm sure, filing things away as you meet people.
Is that mental notebook? You know, Somerset Maugham, I don't know if you've ever read his writer's notebook, but it was published years ago, and every day, he would sit and would, write. He would write when he's traveling. He would write profiles of people that, on deck of a ship. And sometimes when the words wouldn't come, he would just discipline. And he would, for example, write about a chair and who would sit in the chair and where was the chair made and what was the texture of the chair and how did it feel and who sat in the chair and he just one. One thought would lead to another. I mean, it was almost like diagramming a sentence. And pretty soon he had a whole short story about the chair and which he could have easily developed into a novel of how many.
Well, Woody Allen, when Woody Allen writes, I think he said that he works, or he writes a joke, he says he works a joke backwards.
Starting with the punchline.
Yes.
And going backwards. Great if you can do it. I mean, he's a great talent and a great genius.
Working a story backwards. But I just want to say again. I want to get the website for your book is
www.homersincere. HomerSincere. HomerSincere.com, or just Google Homer Sincere and it should come up. Right at the top of the Google page.
And I love, I have to say, when I was reading the names you chose, all the names you chose, and then I thought, wait a minute, even his name, Nathaniel's name, is that of a writer? And I said, there's writer's names here.
Listen, let me tell you, you're quite a writer yourself. I noticed your review that you posted on Amazon, and you are a master at alliteration.
I love alliteration. I can't help it.
I know. I caught one alliterative sentence after another, and I said, "This is my kind of review. I love it. I loved it just for your choice of words and the way you crafted it and put it."
Well, let me just read that because I'll read it out loud because. I said, the life and times of Homer Sincere, whose amazing adventures are documented by his true and trusted friend, Rigby Canfield, by Nathaniel Landy. Reading this book was like rediscovering Mark Twain all over again, with a fine vintage wine. Its colorful, full-bodied characters, Homer, Rigby, Daisy, the last of the cowboys, Billy Sunshine, and the metaphorical sage, Waldo, blended and aged together in an oaken barrel of excellent writing. An impeccable story of friendship and love over the decades. This story, like a fine wine, has legs that transport us through the decades in magical locations, from luscious Louisiana to the crackling creative juices of New York City and more. This book is a portable tome for the century. I predict this book will become an American classic to be read over and over again.
Nancy,
I meant it.
Nancy, you are right on the mark. You're right on target.
It is a tome, and that it's just portable, and just reading it. I'm stuttering again whenever I get excited. Oh, hi, morning coffee. Morning coffee. I don't know what happened, but my chat room just lit up. I guess it was my review. Everybody's coming in. Well, good morning, morning coffee. I see you there, and guest 223 and guest 206, and special shout out to Boston Publicist. Yes, this book was like that, and I do like alliteration, but I also like poetry and rhyme, and wine, and
there you have it.
I equate reading to drinking wine or feeding the mind. I actually take notes while I read people's books, and I called one of my notes was things that come to mind while I was reading, and I said comfort food.
Isn't that how nice? How nice.
And I said I said comfort food for the mind. And that it was just, I felt like I was reading Gone with the Wind all over again. I felt so immersed in the characters because they were just so strong. And then I love that the places you would visit in your books and the locations. I'm telling you, you did write this like a movie script because places like Louisiana, when you were describing Louisiana, I was thinking, boy, I sure could go for a muffalato sandwich right now.
Right, sure.
New York, the bitter end.
Yes.
The bitter end where, you know, Dylan, you had where he brings him and Dylan is there playing.
Yes.
And I, as a performer, I've also performed at the bitter end. So I know these locations, and as you gave us a taste and a flavor, I kept saying, this is like, I feel like I'm having comfort food. The whole time I'm reading this, I feel like I'm having comfort food. Another Blog Talk Radio show has just joined in to say hello to you. They said hello. Morning Coffee says hello.
Well, thank you very much, Morning Coffee.
They're fans of the show, and they're also another radio show. So you've got two radio shows going on at the same time here. And so I thought of that. It was like comfort food reading the book.
Well, you know, there's also a lot of humor in the book. You know, I think the the whole commissary scene in Hollywood at Century Studios, I think, is just a hoot.
And as fate would have it, I have been there. And when I was in L.A., I was a warm-up comedian for the sitcoms.
Oh, my God.
And so I remember sitting in the commissary, and I was that's what I'm saying. I was reliving your book because I was going, oh, that's that person. I can't believe they're in line with me. Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's that person.
Yep, yep.
And the whole, you brought in, it's so many flavors going on in this.
Well,
I think,
you know, I'm a great fan of humor, and I respect what you do, and comedy is just a great art, and I try to inject, you know, a degree of comedy in the book, and the irony, and, you know, the adventures that these two get into, especially when they go into war. And
well, even didn't they have an early adventure?
Well,
when they were caught or they were breaking in.
Sure. When they go to see the Billy Sunshine show, and, you know,
oh,
Sweet
yes,
Lou,
yes,
and,
yes.
and Sweet Lorraine that Rigby wants to photograph. I mean, for our
that reminded me of when you said that you've captured a lot of the forgotten things that children today I don't think would know. But I remember when my father
used to
tell me about
to come to
sneaking into the carnival to see the Hoochie Coochie Girls.
Well, and here they did. And, of course, Rigby is completely enamored by the Hoochie Coochie Girl and wants to photograph her. For our readers, you know, Rigby is the photographer who sees life as it is. Homer's the writer who sees life as he wants it to be. And I think that's a very important distinction.
Oh, well, the chat room, I don't know what happened. Of course, in the last 9 minutes of the show, the chat room's off the charts now. Everybody finally figured out how to log in. Morning Coffee says, don't have any questions, enjoying the show. Thank you, Morning Coffee. Boston Publicist says, is there going to be an audiobook? The book as a movie sounds really great, too. Yes, I said that earlier, Boston Publicist. This would make a – if anyone's listening, if you're a producer, get on board and make this into a movie, please. And will there be an audiobook?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Boston Publicist, I'm going to predict this will be a movie before it's an audiobook, and then it's going to be an audiobook again.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
It
Hollywood,
is. This would make a fantastic movie.
Well, Hollywood is going through a lot of growing pains today, and they all want, action adventure.
There is action adventure in your book.
I think there's a lot, and I think, I love small movies like, The Postman, Il Postino. Movies with heart.
There was a movie that came out years ago, and I think it was Natalie Portman's first film, and it was called The Professional.
Yeah, I remember. Yes.
And
yes.
That was just, again, you get absorbed into it,
because
the characters save each other, so
right.
to speak.
Right. Well, hopefully. Hopefully that producer or director will get it to Ron Howard, and we'll get it to Spielberg, and we'll get it to all the...
Well, I'm certainly going to tell all my friends at the Friars Club about it.
Well, I used to be a member of the Friars and the Players and the Lambs.
Oh, I perform at the Friars Club every now and then. Every once a month I perform in the downstairs.
Well, I was a member of the Players. Living in California, I dropped my membership, but I was a member of the Players down at Gramercy Park for years. And what a wonderful room that is downstairs, isn't it?
Yes, they have a cabaret the last Monday of every month.
I'm so
they have
glad
a cabaret downstairs.
I'm so glad.
I'm a member of the Friars Club as well. And we have so many paths that cross. But before the show ends in the last 6 minutes, I want to get, this is Overlook Press. You can get this on Amazon.com, The Life and Times of Homer Sincere.com. I just put it up on my chat room. So chat people, if you want to get the book, you can go to that website. Oh, you're welcome, Morning Coffee. They're going right to the link. That's good. The Life and Times, you can get it at BarnesandNobles.com. And also, you can go if you want. If you, like me, want to know more about Nathaniel Hawthorne, I want to call you Nathaniel Hawthorne now. See what you've done?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Go to www.nathaniellandy.com to find more information on him. This book is just, I can't tell you, it's the best thing I've read all year. No offense, all my other authors that I've interviewed. But it's my favorite book that I've read this year. It is my favorite. I can't stop talking about it to everyone I see.
Nancy,
I said, you've got to read.
Nancy,
I can't. I'm an honest fan.
Nancy, I hope I can believe you.
Yes. Why can you believe me? Just ask anyone. I've been saying to everyone, they went, can you borrow it? And I said, I don't know. I want to reread some things first, and then I'll loan it to you. No, I said, go buy it. You
thank
buy
you
your
very
own
much.
Copy. I'm keeping this.
Right.
And it is so good. It's very well done. I'm going to look into your other books, Cricket and The 10 Best of Everything.
It's a wonderful travel book. It's the ultimate travel book. And it has some wonderful profiles and delightful firsthand experiences, mixed through the book called Snapshots. And it's a I will say, having been in publishing for so many years and having served as a creative director, I used my old poster collection of 400 travel posters, vintage travel posters that are scattered through the book. It's a very handsome, it's a very elegant book.
Maybe you should, this should be a book to send to Cameron. I'm thinking of the guy who directed the Titanic. I think you should just start sending this book to people. Because
well,
it would make such a great movie.
Well, I'm going to tell
you. So many layers. It's got to go to somebody who's inventive and can do multi-layering.
I would
because
agree
it has
you.
So many layers to it. I'm thinking Cameron Crowe. It's so many layers. There's so many layers to this movie. You have to think outside the box. I mean, I'm already calling it a movie. Look at that. It's
well,
already a movie in my mind. But it's been great talking with you, Nathaniel. Nathaniel Landy. Everything about your name just reminds me of something else. I'm thinking of W.C. Handy, Landy. But everything,
Randy,
the characters, Daisy,
Randy,
you know.
Randy, right.
All my favorite things, The Rise and Fall of Daisy Clover, Eleanor Rigby. It's just Homer Simpson, but also Homer the writer,
yes.
Homer the poet. So
yes.
All of your character names, Waldo, Where's Waldo? Everything is just of the springboard for something else. Nathaniel Hawthorne, Nathaniel Landy. Well, let's hope they all come together. And I think what I'm going to do to play us out, I'm going to play the song again. Thank you, Nathaniel Landy.
Nancy,
the Life and Times of Homer Sincere. Everyone, I highly recommend this book. Look at my review on Amazon. You'll thank me for reading this. So
thank you, Nancy, for a lovely, lovely time with you.
Oh, sure. And I'm going to play us out on The Ballad of Homer Sincere. Thank you, Nathaniel Landy. You've been
Bye.
A great guest.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Well, I just read a book about a Western movie fan. The life and times of Homer ends up where it began. His childhood was a nightmare. Contrast as we learn from his friend, as I read from his journal, his daily journal, I came to the conclusion that the last cowboy is gone. The last cowboy,
the last cowboy hero,
the last cowboy, and a soldier of the word, inspired by his friends and the great books that he read, and rolling like a tumbleweed down the road. Stepping stone, so I followed his journey like it was my own. I went on a boat ride, a river boat ride that I'd been on before with Huckleberry Finn. He loved to go to Earl's Place and chow down on grilled cheese. The cabin was called Pea Patch, but he never ate no peas. He saw lots of sugar babes.